a little bit of fear and trepidation, starting a new series. So last month, we looked at discipling, discipleship. What is that? What is it to be a disciple? And what is it that we are being discipled to? And this month, we're going to look at blessing. So discipling, begin in the middle. Blessing, and then next month, we're going to look at worshiping. And how they relate together. How do they fit together? So just a very quick recap. I said last month about discipleship. Discipleship is not optional. It's not something that we can choose to be a disciple or not be a disciple. Disciple is whatever you follow. Whatever you are following is what you're discipling to. What you're being discipled to. If you follow money, if you pursue status, if you pursue influence, if you pursue prestige, those are the things that are discipling you. You're being discipled into those things. So even if you choose not to follow anybody, not to follow anything, that's a choice. And you're making a choice of discipleship. You can't avoid it. Everyone serves something. Who or what is the question? The kingdom of God, following Jesus, the kingdom that comes from that is not an accessory to an already perfect or nearly perfect life. It's not the final touch on my ensemble. Knowing Jesus and being known by him, that's at the core of discipling, of being discipled. Being discipled to Jesus is knowing him and being known by him. And it starts there, and that's the end and the goal, and that's how we do it. It starts with Jesus, it ends with Jesus. Jesus is the middle of it. There's no substitute for it. The beginning and the middle and the end. The starting place, the goal, and the path. Knowing him, being known by him. The way, the truth, the life. And discipleship requires sacrifice. Anything that you follow will require sacrificing one thing for another thing, valuing one thing over another thing. There will be a cost to following Jesus. And the cost we will discover as we follow more and more is everything. It's my life. It's my whole life. Jesus doesn't want a little bit of me. He doesn't want my part-time discipleship. Jesus wants me to be his disciple. He wants you to be his disciple. And it will, frankly, cost you everything else because it will trump everything else. Everything else will be subservient or submissive to that. And so, it's the thing that will shape us. What we're discipled to shapes us and creates our identity. And so if we're discipled to Jesus, Jesus will shape and create and define our identity, who we are. We will receive that from him. And if we follow something else, we'll receive our identity from that. We give our lives in discipleship. We give our lives for something. Greater love has no one than that they lay down their life for their friends. It's not just martyrdom. It's that laying down of our lives for each other. Laying down of our lives for Jesus. He does it for us. He shows us how to do it, not just in his crucifixion, but all through his life and all in the way he calls us. And he calls us to do the same. To lay down our lives for those around us. To choose to sacrifice what is good for me for what is best for us. To sacrifice what is good for me for what is best for us. And it's not a choice between being a servant and being free. Freedom is not an option, really. We all serve. Everybody serves. Whether we're following Jesus or following something else, we all serve. The freedom that we have in our lives will be measured by the kindness of our Master. Freedom is measured by the love of whatever it is that we make our Master. I have found, in my experience, Jesus to be a truthful and kind Master. The path of discipleship requires sacrifice, which is unavoidable. If we stay on the path of discipleship, it's unavoidable. If we immerse ourselves in the love of God, we will find that it burns away those other things that attach themselves to us, that encrust themselves on us. It starts to give us who we truly are by burning away the things that we are not. And we're blessed in that. It's something that is a blessing. We start to discover, and Jesus says, yes, you know, when Peter said, well, we've given up, you know, our families, we've given up everything to follow you. And Jesus says, yes, and you will receive far more. You will receive more than you can possibly imagine. Family. And good things. And persecution. It's all part of it. But you will receive something much greater. And so he's saying to us, yes, it will cost. It will cost you everything. And it'll be worth it. You will be blessed far more than you can imagine now. And that moves us into blessing. The need for us to not focus on what it is that we're being called to sacrifice, to give up, but to focus on what it is that God is giving us. That's the exchange that we're making. When we sacrifice something, whenever there was a sacrifice, it was somebody saying, I'm willing to give up this because I think that's more valuable. I'm willing to trade this thing now for something that will be better for me in the future, better for us in the future. And so I'm willing to make this sacrifice. And so we're going to go back and we're going to look at Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 to 4. It's a short little verse, short little section of verses, but it's part of a much bigger story. And so I want to just set a little bit of context for it. It's the story of Abram's call. Abram, who became Abraham. Abram was the son of Terah. And Terah had left Ur, the city of Ur, which was probably kind of Iraqish area, somewhere around in there, and was coming to Canaan. He was going to Canaan, and then he settled. He just stopped. And he settled where he was, and he kind of settled for what he had. He started a journey, and then he stopped. And Abram lived with his father, lived in his father's house. And at the beginning of the story here, Abram is already 75 years old. He's not a kid. And Abram is called by God. He's called, and he's called to be blessed. I want to read it here. The Lord said to Abram, go from your country, your people, your father's house, your father's household, to the land I will show you, and I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you. So Abram went, as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Thinking about blessing and bless, what is that? Trying to figure out and meditating on that and thinking about it a lot. It's one of those words that we hear over and over and we kind of think we know what it is. But as we start to stir it a little bit, we realize, I'm not really sure. I mean, it means a whole lot of things and it's all kind of general. It's to to bless somebody with a gift. Oh, I'm so blessed. I'm so blessed to have the car I have. I'm so blessed to have this boat. I'm so blessed to have my wife. I'm so blessed with such great kids. I'm so blessed to have this. I'm so blessed to have that. I've been blessed with much. I've been given much. That's a good usage of it. That's legit. It's favor, too. It's to be in someone's blessing is to be in their good graces, in their good favor. To bless is also to thank or to praise. It's used like that as well. To make holy. I looked it up, I was looking at definitions of it and the different ways that it's used. To make something holy, to bless something, to make it sacred, to make it holy, to make it special, to look with favor on that thing, to create kind of a hierarchy. This is separate and this is kind of base and normal, but this is special. This is blessed. This is set aside. Or you could ask for someone's blessing. You're asking not just for their begrudging permission. You're asking for their endorsement. You're asking for their encouragement. You're asking for them to say, yes, yes, you are acting in accordance with what I want. When we vote for politicians, we are giving them our blessing. To go and act on our behalf. To go and make decisions on our behalf. When we choose a church council, we bless them and we say, you make decisions on our behalf. You bless someone and you send them for a special purpose. We blessed Cindy before she left to go on the Camino. And now she's back. And we all want to hear about it. But we gave her our encouragement and our blessing to go and do this thing. Why? Because we knew it would be good for her. We wanted to bless her. We wanted what was good for her. And when God promises to bless Abram, he's saying, I will give you what will be good for you. I want, Abram, God is saying, I want what is good for you. You trust me in this, and I will bless you. And I will bless you, and I will encourage you, and I will protect you. I will walk with you. I will prepare the way for you. I will bless people who bless you, and I will curse people who curse you. I will bless those who live in blessing in relation to you. And I will, people who deal in curses, that's what they'll get. There's a reciprocal relationship that God seems to be hinting at, that the scriptures hint at here. And it starts, this is early, this is Genesis 12. This is early in the whole sort of developing thinking of what is it to be blessed by God? That there's this reciprocal relationship in blessing. God blesses us. We are blessed. But we are called to be a blessing. And other people can bless us. And we can bless God. It's like a triangle that goes in both directions. God blesses me, but not just for me. My blessings in my life are never just for me, and they weren't for Abram. He was blessed to be a blessing. Abram, 75 years old, married, living in his dad's basement. The basement of the tent, I guess. And he takes whatever he feels he could rightly call his. He takes his wife. He takes some possessions with him. He takes a bit of family. Lot goes with him. We'll see how that works out. And I'd encourage you, actually, to read the whole story. It's like an adventure story. It's great. Start in about Genesis 11, if you want. Get the backstory on Terah and Abram's father. And then read through the story of Abraham up to maybe chapter 18 or something like that. It won't take very long. But you'll see some things that are really interesting. And I think some things that help us understand blessing. Abram leaves. He takes those things with him. He's operating on the promise of God. I'm called to be blessed. I'm going to go out. I'm going to go and allow God to bless me. And the first thing he runs into is a famine. A famine. Not just a regular famine, a severe famine. When God calls us to go out and be blessed by him, when God calls us to follow, he does not take us out of the suffering of the world. We will run face first into the suffering of the world. Abram then decides to leave the famine area and go to Egypt because they have food in Egypt. That's a theme that keeps repeating itself, right? People going to Egypt for safety, for shelter, for food, for the abundance. Fleeing an economic refugee, I might remind you, fleeing the famine in his area and coming to the place where there was enough, where there was food. But it was also Egypt. Egypt was a powerful empire at that time, a really oppressive, dominant empire at that time. And there's no indication that Abram had ever really encountered Egyptians, but he'd probably heard about them. And he goes there, and immediately he becomes afraid. He becomes afraid that they're going to see how beautiful his wife is. They're going to kill him and take everything he has, including his wife. And so he comes up with this idea. I know what I'll do. I'll tell them that she's my sister, and then they won't kill me. They don't. They do see that Sarai is beautiful, and Pharaoh hears about Sarai, and Pharaoh does what Pharaoh does, which is to take the beautiful women who are single and unattached into his harem, and she becomes part of the harem. And Abram is blessed by Pharaoh with cattle and gifts and servants, and all kinds of benefits start to accrue to Abram at the same time that Pharaoh and his household are being cursed over and over by God. Why? Because Pharaoh, unknown to him, has taken a married woman into his... He's taken someone's wife. And Pharaoh perceives that as a persecution, as a punishment. What's really interesting here is we can get all kind of stuck on, well, that's not very fair, that's not right of God. The story is about Abram. Let's focus on him for a second. He lied. He confronts his own fear and his own limitation. Just because God calls us to be a blessing doesn't mean that everything we are going to do is going to be right, is going to be good, is going to be the right thing. We're still subject to all the same fears and limitations and shortcomings and failures that we carry with us wherever we go. Because wherever you go, there you are. And so Abram shows up with all of his fears and shortcomings, and he makes a mess of it. Because following God, yes, God will bless us, and yes, we will encounter the suffering of the world, the external suffering of the world, and yes, we will be placed in situations where we will be in among people who are oppressors. And yes, we will be confronted with our own shortcomings, our own fears, our own liabilities, our own inability. We'll be confronted. His fear was of those people, those bad Egyptians. And the Egyptians turned out to be far more fair and they were good. They were good to him. They did everything that they should have done. He projected this evil image on them and got them totally wrong. And then what does Abram do? Well, Pharaoh sends him out and gives him all kinds of stuff and says, go and go on your way and be gone. Why have you done this to me? Pharaoh says to him. And Abram goes and immediately forms an alliance with the king of Sodom and the king of Gomorrah. God is still blessing him, but it doesn't mean he's making wise choices. It doesn't mean he's doing all the things that he should. What he's doing is he's gotten out from his father's home, which was what he was called to do. He was called to go to Cana. Go to Canaan. Go to the land I'm going to show you, and I will bless you, and I will take care of you. My blessing will be upon you. It doesn't mean that everything you're going to do is going to be right. You're going to make lots of mistakes, and you're going to get lots of things wrong. You're going to be adjusting your course as you go. And this is the template for all of us, as we're called by God. We're called to move in this discipling. We're being discipled. And just like all the disciples in the Gospels, they got it wrong over and over and over. And they were moving. They were moving where God was calling them to go. They were trying to follow Jesus. And they follow this direction and that doesn't quite work out. And it's, we went too far this way and we go this way. We're following this. Oh, no, he's over there now. And they're constantly adjusting their course and moving because they're seeking to follow. They're getting it wrong. If we as a community follow Jesus, he will bless us. Not because he won't bless us if we don't. He'll still bless us. But he'll be able to bless us because we'll be working in concert with him. And guaranteed, a couple of things. We will directly encounter the suffering of the world around us. And we will encounter our own malevolence. We'll encounter our own flaws. We'll encounter the dark places in our own hearts. And this will all be part of the blessing, because this is what God will be burning off. He'll be burning off the things that we get wrong. He'll be calling us to something higher. He'll be calling us to the truth. Don't lie, Abram. Just don't lie. Try that. Try not lying. Calling us to tell the truth. And if we can't tell the truth, at least don't lie. And to follow a little more closely. To listen for his voice. Knowing that he is going to bring us into some really difficult circumstances. And he's going to bless us. He has blessed us with so much. But he has not given us this just for us. We are all called to be blessed and to be a blessing. And they go together. They are reciprocal. We cannot follow Jesus without being blessed. And we cannot follow without being a blessing. We cannot follow without encountering the suffering of the world around us. And we cannot follow without encountering the darkest places inside each of us and the poor choices that we'll make. Again, the poor choices that we will make and we'll continue to make. But that blessing of God is embedded in the call. The blessedness is part of the call. Regardless of how it comes to us. And so Jesus can say, blessed are the poor, and blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Blessed are the humble. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are you when you're persecuted. And so we will see this relationship, we will begin to see that, yes, God has blessed us. God has given us much. And I can give out of my abundance. But Jesus calls us to more, to give out of the very stuff of our lives. And we will receive more. And then this strange thing starts to happen. The strangest use of the word bless. We are called to bless the Lord. Well, I get that he blesses us and he blesses other people. And I get that I might bless someone and they might bless me. But to bless the Lord? To bless the Lord? How can I bless the Lord? What could I give that would bless the Lord. Everything I have and everything I am that is worth having or being is a gift from Him anyway. But we are called to bless the Lord to our very souls, to the very core of who we are. Bless the Lord, O my soul. The psalmist said, bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me, bless His holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and do not forget all His benefits. Who forgives all your iniquities? Who heals all your diseases? Who redeems your life from the pit? Who crowns you with the steadfast love and mercy? Who satisfies you with good as long as you live, so that your youth is renewed like an eagle's? The Lord. The Lord works vindication and justice for all who are oppressed. He made known His ways to Moses, His acts to the people of Israel. The Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. He'll not always accuse, nor will He keep His anger forever. He does not deal with us according to our sins, nor repay us according to our iniquities. For as the heavens are high above the earth, so great is the steadfast love of the Lord toward those who fear Him. As far as the east is from the west, so far He removes our transgressions from us. As a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion for those who fear Him. For He knows how we're made. He remembers that we're dust. As for mortals, our days are like grass. We flourish like a flower of the field, and the wind passes over it, and we're gone. And the place knows us no more. But the steadfast love of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting to those who fear Him, and His righteousness to His children's children, to those who keep His covenant and remember to do His commandments. The Lord has established His throne in the heavens, and His kingdom rules over all. Bless the Lord, O you angels, you mighty ones who do His bidding, obedient to His spoken word. Bless the Lord, all His hosts, His ministers that do His will. Bless the Lord, all His works in all places of His dominion. Bless the Lord, O my soul. Amen.